Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
We've got Rick. He's in Woodstock, Illinois. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh. How are you? I want to apologize because we just moved back to Chicago from Seattle. I was born and raised here in Park Ridge and lived 55 years, then I retired and moved to Seattle. We've been there for 26 years and just moved back. And I had always listened to WGN before, but I'm ashamed to say I hadn't heard of you until I got back this time. I'm sorry. My only excuse is I was a musician. That's what I did for 35 years, and I worked every night. And by the time we got through playing the third show, I was just had the quiet coming home and just went to bed. But just hearing you on WGN, you have awakened so many memories, good memories. I'm old. I'm in my 80s, and you would say things and talk about things that just you just made my whole move back here worth it.
Oh,
I mean, I enjoy your show immensely, and I'm learning so much. And I just kind of miss this. It's like movies, because I always work nights. So I missed all movies, so I can watch them now.
Sure.
See what I missed.
Sure. So,
I had some questions.
Okay, let me ask you one first. When did you move to Seattle?
I retired in 1993.
Okay.
So, in 1993.
So, you missed me. See, my brief tenure at King, I was going to say, you missed that. I practically missed it, but that was before you. All right, so, questions.
Okay. Do you remember WJJD?
Oh, of course, Shearing Plow.
Radio station.
AN had to run down at sundown Utah time because of KSL.
Ah, well, that's very close to where I grew up. It's just blocks from where I grew up.
Ah.
And during World War II, after dinner, sometimes my dad would take my mom and I, and we'd go for a ride in the car in the 40s, and we'd listen to the Suppertime Frolics on WJJD. Mm-hmm. And there was a DJ, and I don't know his last name, but his voice was very similar to that of Tennessee Ernie Ford. And his first name was Randy. And between every song, he did a commercial about gravestones.
Yeah, right, absolutely. So, don't let your mother lay out in the cold another night without a proper marker. Write tombstones, WJJD. That's spelled WJJD.
Wow. See, I knew you. Do you happen to know what his name was?
You know,
I've thought about him. I can still hear his voice.
Yeah, and this was probably at the time that Ralph Atlas owned the station, but I cannot remember him, and it'll come to me. I know exactly who you mean. I might have a tape of him somewhere around, but yes, I do know who you mean. Yeah.
Well, then my second question was when I got out
was
of
it, wait, was it Randy Blake? Randy Blake?
Yes.
Okay, yes.
Yes.
Okay. All
bless
right.
You. That's
yeah.
It.
Yeah.
That's
because
he
started there in the 30s, I think, as a singer, the Suppertime Frolics and all that. And
Suppertime Frolics.
Yeah. He's been dead since 1974, I think. Maybe not. Maybe not. Now, that may be terrible to say, but he's been gone a long time.
But that was his name. Every time I said Randy, I kept coming up with Travis, of course, which is not.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Oh, bless you. I've been trying to think of that name for years and years and years.
Yeah, Randy Blake.
He just had a voice that I couldn't forget.
And there are probably interviews with him online. I haven't looked for them, but he was inducted into various, you know, Hall of Fame type things. And so I'm sure if you look, you're going to find something archived.
Oh, I didn't know they would have something that I guess it's worth.
Well, you know, think about Chicago and country music, because, you know, he certainly could be talking about the Barn Dance, the National Barn Dance.
I used to listen to it every Saturday.
Right, on WLS and then later WGN. Sure. So I would think the Country Music Foundation or others, I'll look for this later. I'll bet you that you can probably even go to YouTube and hear something.
This is amazing. I can't believe it. Your memory is wonderful. I wish I had it. When I got out of the military in 1960, I came back here to Chicago, and I spent 2 years in the Arctic in Greenland and 2 years in Antarctica. So I was like away from everything.
Oh, man.
I missed everything. And on WCFL, the morning person in 1960.
Yeah, Dan Sorkin. 1960, Dan Sorkin.
Oh, that's the name.
Yeah, he's my fave. He's my all-time fave. And I still have my Save Rose Bimler button.
I have one also.
Yes, I wear it proudly.
Save Rose.
Yes, Rose Bimler. Yes, you betcha.
I was listening to him in the morning when he played the Lena Horne thing. He says, that's Lena Horne and her horny men. And on soon after that. But Mike Rapchak was his second banana.
Yeah.
Dan Sorkin.
Yeah, Dan Sorkin. Oh, sadly, he only died a couple of years ago. Within the last decade, for sure, he died in his 90s. And when he left CFL, he went out to California, and he was on the air in San Francisco, had a bad motorcycle accident, lost a leg, wound up getting involved with Synanon, and became their pilot, and actually was still flying planes up till pretty much his death. And he started an organization called Stumps R Us, a whimsical support group for amputees that I wish was still around, because he did a great job with that. And nothing stopped him. He was certifiably insane. Don't get me wrong. He was a crazy man. But you know, I mean, I love Dan at a distance, if you know what I mean. Didn't want to get too close, but absolutely thought he was the funniest damn thing. And I remember one time he had that contest, Why I Want 7 Beautiful Girls and a Rolls Royce in 10 Words or Less. You know, things like that.
I thought he was awesome. Oh, yeah. I thought he was just terrific, and I couldn't think of his name.
Yeah.
And I remember at Christmas time, he would play Christmas carols, and there was a carol he said was written by Mike Rapchak. And being a musician, it's one of the most beautiful Christmas songs I've ever heard, and they would play it at CFL just at Christmas time. I wondered, I mean, I'd never heard it was published or anybody did it, but is Mike Rapchak gone too?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that for sure, but I shouldn't say that, you know, because the last time I pronounced somebody dead, they called in, but... that was in L.A., actually. Yeah, she called in. Uh-huh. And so I think it was Joni James. But anyway, she was very much alive. But I think Mike died in about 2006, if I'm not dean of the big bands. And I'm pretty sure that's right. But somebody will call and correct me otherwise. But yeah, he did Christmas piano concertos and things like that. And that probably is also something everything's online these days. So I would say go to YouTube and look around. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised.
I will. It was a beautiful tune. It was a beautiful tune. When we were on ship going up to the Arctic, and this is in 1958,
mm-hmm.
and we were only got supplies through his supply ship. We were on an icebreaker. I was in the Navy, but it was commissioned into the Coast Guard icebreaker, commissioned into the Navy as the USS Atka for these special things we were doing. So all that came onto the ship, either by helicopter, we got our Christmas mail in February, usually, because the weather was bad and we didn't get it. And one of the fellows had a 45 record player, and he had two records. Now, if you can imagine being in close quarters and there could be only two records you could have, what two records would you think would be, you know, acceptable?
Oh, none of it would be acceptable, but I'm sure in 1958 they were two that you heard one time too many.
Well, one of them was Happy, Happy Birthday, Baby.
Right, the Toonweavers.
And I don't...
The Toonweavers.
Was it the Toonweavers?
Yes, okay, Toonweavers, Margot Sylvia on lead. Yes. And the other one?
And the other one was Transfusion.
Oh, Nervous Norvis.
Nervous Norvis.
Put a gallon in me, Alan. Barnyard drivers coming to classes, line crowding hogs and steeding jackasses, so remember to slow down today. Hey, Daddy-O, make that type
beautiful,
O.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, when I started when I started playing, I went to the University of Illinois through the GI Bill when I got out at Navy Pier there, where it was. And I was a drummer, and I started getting some jobs from through my drum teacher. And I was playing, I was one of the people that you hear about that really believed, and I'm not ashamed to say it because it's the truth, but I am ashamed, that I was one of those people that thought rock and roll was a fad like Calypso and would die.
You're not alone.
And all I wanted to do was listen to Coltrane and to Dave Brubeck and things like this. This is all I cared about.
You're not alone.
But,
not alone. After all, you know, Mitch Miller believed it. In fact, he's the one who kept calling the government saying that disc jockeys needed to be investigated for payola because no adult would play that music without being paid to do it.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Hang on a minute. Don't go away. We'll pick it up right there.
Yes.
We're talking to Rick. He's in Woodstock. And we've got Bill and Richard and Tom and Eduardo and one line available for you tonight on WGN Radio. Nervous, nervous. Yes, exactly. Nervous, nervous was actually James Drake, and he was from Memphis, born in 1912. So he was not exactly a spring chicken when that came out in 1956. We're talking with Rick, who is a first-time caller from Woodstock, Illinois, on WGN Radio. So sorry for the interruption.
Oh no! Listen, I am enjoying this so much. Last night you were talking about commercials. I wasn't first call by any chance, but I did quite a few of them in the 60s and the 70s. And when you were talking about jingles,
yeah,
and the Jingle House, the studios that I did some work in here was Universal Recording, which is on Walton and Rush in CRC, Chicago Recording.
Sure.
And do you remember the Singers Unlimited with Bonnie Herman?
Oh, I was going to say Bonnie Herman, and that's Bonnie did those wonderful WCFL jingles, one of which I played last night. Bonnie was terrific.
She was there. I guess we were heard. The musicians heard that she was the I don't want to say richest, but well off more than any other female in Chicago.
Well, remember
from
she
all
was
the reuse.
Not only that, she was the daughter of the champagne lady on Lawrence Welk.
Yes.
And her husband was Jules Herman, who was a trumpeter. But she was the original Like a Good Neighbor, State Farm is There, and so much more.
That's right.
Yeah. Hang on again.
Right.
We're going to find out what's going on in the world. I have no idea what that might be, but we'll all be edified together and pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
In the nightclub.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Elkie Brooks. Pearl's a singer. 1977 on A&M. Lieber and Stoller produced and co-wrote that. It was recorded in the Netherlands. Elkie Brooks is Elaine Bookbinder, known as the British Queen of Soul. Didn't chart here, but was top 10 in the UK. Her brother was the drummer for Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas, and it's not the usual stuff you hear from Lieber and Stoller. I played it because Mike Stoller turned 88 over the weekend, still with us, so happy birthday to Mike Stoller. And we're talking to Rick in Woodstock. Again, sorry to interrupt you. Rick's back.
Oh, thanks, Raleigh. You have people that are waiting to talk. I don't want to, but I'm just enjoying this. So just two quick things is, listening last night to that girl that called in, Wanda, from Pennsylvania about being a jingle singer.
Uh-huh.
What happened was in the 60s and the 70s, it was fine because we lived on we get the reuse checks every 13 weeks, you know. We would get reuse checks. I got one from McDonald's that I did in 1968, and I got the last reuse check in 94.
That's great.
So that one lasts a long time. But what happened was, I remember we were doing a spot for Ace Hardware, and we'd been done quite a few of them, and then I got a call that it was canceled, you know.
Mm.
And what happened was, I think it was 82, and they had decided to go to Indianapolis. There was a new word that came out then called buyout, instead of getting the...
Yeah, those pesky unions, easy to just go down.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's what happened. That's when the buyouts happened, and I saw that. Eventually, that's one of the reasons that I quit. There were too many DJs coming in. People, I played shows. I worked at the Milrun Theater from time to time, and the Empire Room, and the different Playboy clubs, and the London House, and Mr. Kelly's. And when the group started coming in, they would bring tapes in, and that, and so. That was it. But I just wanted to just mention one more name and ask you if you know. I'm not sure when he passed, but he was the kind of a crazy guy. And I was playing a place on Rush Street with a trio, a jazz trio. And he came in, and it was his name was Marty Fay.
Oh, sure.
And, yeah. And I first met him, I didn't know who he was or anything, but he used to come in. He told me that I was, when he said that, he says, "You're I was innocent but warped."
Yeah.
That's what he said. And
he was Mr. Personality. Yeah, Mr. Personality. Yeah.
Man, I'll tell you.
Marty Fay. Yeah, absolutely.
His sister was a singer, a jazz singer, Frances Fay,
and
she was coming into the London House. He hired me to get the band and be conductor for her at the London House, and she was just like her brother. She was another trip.
Well, Marty Fay was interesting. He was just like you in that he hated rock and roll. And he got on the air one day and said that Elvis will be exposed as nothing more than mediocre. And literally, they got a bomb threat. And he was host at the time of Marty's Morgue on Channel 7, which was WBKB at the time.
Yeah, that's right.
That 10 p.m. movie
Marty's
thing. Marty's Morgue, yeah.
He
was nasty to guess just for the fun of it. But...
Well, he threw Paul Anka off his show one time. I remember I was watching it, and he asked Paul Anka, "Well, you write songs, you're a composer. How do you rate yourself within?" And then Paul Anka started saying, "Well, you know," I says, "I kept thinking things like Gershwin and these things." And Marty says, "Excuse me," and he looks around. He says, "Mr. Producer, who hired this guy?" And he just started yelling at him. He says, "Get off my stage! Get off!" He got up and he kind of picked him up a chair and kind of pushed him off the stage, and they went to commercial.
Oh yeah,
I've never seen anything like it.
I think that was when he was on CIU Channel 26 doing that show. And what's funny, of course, Anka had the last laugh because he wrote the Tonight Show theme, so that made him wealthy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that show, he'd have people like George Shearing or Tony Bennett on that normally. So Paul Anka was a real departure. And I think the last station he worked at was BEE in Harvey, which was jazz. And he was on, I think, in middays there. And after that, I don't know. But I think BEE in the mid-80s was probably it.
Hmm. Wow. Well, listen, I want to thank you for talking to me for long and answering my questions. Every time I listen to you, it brings up another memory, right? What happened to this or that? And I hope I don't bother you with this.
No, I hope you'll call again. Always good to hear from you. So don't be a stranger, Rick.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to listening to you.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Thanks, Raleigh.
Bye-bye. That's great. Yeah, people I rarely think about anymore, but Marty Fay, he was another one of those, man, did he hate rock and roll. And but he wasn't alone. Oh, I'll tell you who else did. Sheb Woolley was Purple People Eater and all that. He just hated it. And Purple People Eater was supposed to be just a pimp on rock and roll. And I think he was most dismayed when it was a big hit. But he later did a lot of country stuff as Ben Colder, some parodies and stuff like that. All right, so we got Eduardo. He's at the airport. Well, by the airport in Midway. So what's up, Eduardo?
Yeah, good evening. It's great to talk to you.
Likewise.
I heard you talking about... Blue Cross. There were some Blue Cross singers the other day. That was pretty funny because my brother used to work for us.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's absolutely true. And I'm going to play that record later. We had it was Blue Emotions, who was a kind of a doo-wop group in Jersey, New York area, and they became Blue Emotions, because they couldn't use the name Emotions anymore. There were lawsuits, but it was Blue because they all worked for Blue Cross.
How about that? You learned something today.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you, you remember Charles Carroll? He used to be on the morning show.
Of course.
That kind of reminded me of No Man Land, because, you know, she's riding on the RV because, you know, she lost her job, and so now she's riding on the American West. That kind of reminded me of Charles Carroll doing that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. His On the Road, sadly, he's been gone a while now.
Right.
He died in like 97.
I miss
On the Road. The interesting thing about that was posthumous. And I don't know how it finally turned out, but he had a mistress, and it was who was living in one of these homes in godforsaken nowhere. And I don't know how that turned out. The last I heard, his family was trying to get rid of her, and I don't know. But, yeah, it was quite the soap opera there for a minute.
Yeah, that's something. Well, it's one of my favorite shows. I mean, when I was growing up, American Bandstand on Saturday, and then Sunday morning show with Charles Carroll, and then later on with forgot his name. He retired. The guy that came replaced Charles Carroll. I forgot. Charles Osgood.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody could replace Charles Carroll, though. Not really. Somebody could stand
there. No, he was. Yeah.
Yeah. He was what he was, but yeah, he was only 62 when he died.
Oh my God! That's pretty young.
And see, I don't think that's why probably. And the mistress, I remember her name was Patricia something or other, and the widow. This went to court. This was a big deal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I don't know how it turned out. I'll have to look that up. I bet you it's still online somewhere. So, usually...
That'd be something good to research, too.
Yeah. I'll have to write that down to see what happened to poor Patricia in that lawsuit. But she had people testifying on her behalf, as I recall, because she had a piece of that house beyond just his goodness. But, yeah, Patricia... I think it's Patricia Shannon, but I'll have to look that up. Okay.
Okay. Hey, before I go, I'd like to request a song. Classic for Stormy.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of raining today. Yeah.
Okay. Classics for
whenever you get around to it.
Okay, I'd be happy to do that. Atlanta. All right, we'll do it.
Okay, Ron. I'll let you get to the next caller.
Thanks.
We'll talk next week, maybe.
I'm counting.
Okay.
On it.
Have a good weekend.
All righty. You too. So let's see. The Classics Four were interesting. They played a lot around Atlanta, and some of them used to play with Dennis St. John, who later became musical director for Neil Diamond. But for a while, he had this group, St. John and the Cardinals, and they would, you know, play in Marietta and places like that, or, you know, the WFOM dances or whatever, and throughout Seattle, but throughout Atlanta. But they had a great bit because St. John and the Cardinals, they didn't have to worry about how to dress. They just wore choir uniforms. But what they would do was they would rent them. And and this went on for quite a while until one day they were returning the uniforms after some ruckus night where they were, of course, on stage sweating with hours of rhythm and blues and rock and roll. And the guy who ran the choir uniform rental place looked at him and said, "What kind of church you boys belong to?" I always laughed about that. But yeah, St. John and the Cardinals. And then some of them, like I say, went on to Classics Four, and then Atlanta Rhythm Section later. Yeah, their bassist, I forget his name now. He was a friend too, but he's no longer with us either. Man, how quickly they go. All right, so we've got Bill and Bala, Richard in South Florida, Tom in Covington, and Room for You coming up on WGN Radio. Yesterday's love. WGN Radio. I'm Riley James. That's Dennis Yost of the Classics Four. I actually started in Jacksonville, later Atlanta, and was interesting because when Dean Dougherty joined, he had been in the Candyman, Roy Orbison's group, and he and Buddy Bowie, who was producer for all those records and co-writer of Stormy, along with J.R. Cobb, they left and joined the Atlanta Rhythm Section, where my buddy Paul Goddard, I finally thought of his name, sadly been gone since 2014, was bassist. So a lot of good stuff, but yeah, that was That was a big hit for the Classics Four. Traces even higher on the charts, however. But yeah, quite a few records. So happy to do that for Eduardo near the airport at Midway. And room for you, as always, 888-876-5593. That'd be 8888-ROLLYE. Bill is in Ballo. Welcome to WGN Radio.
So am I under the impression that you're under the impression that people actually need to board the rides in amusements to start screaming?
Well, now they're not allowed to scream when they board the ride. This is the part. And I see, now you have to get into, is the scream voluntary?
Well, see, my problem is I've never needed to actually board the ride to start screaming. One look at the concession stand prices.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. Well, and the lines and everything else, you know. I went to Disneyland when it opened when I was a child. It was 1955, and I never went back after that. And I can't tell you how many people would come to Southern California. Will you take me to Disneyland? I said, well, I'll drop you off at the front, but that's as far as I'd get. So, yes, that's apparently the deal. They originally were going to outlaw streaming, as they have in Japan. I love that scream within your heart. That just sounds like an e-ticket to the emergency room to me. But in any event, they apparently now can scream, providing they social distance. But the other half of that is usually that's about the time you want to grab the person next to you, who hopefully you know very well, and hold on for dear life.
Yeah, I know Disneyland gets knocked a lot because it's so incredibly overpriced these days. But the one thing that that Disneyland does do right, and I have to give them credit for this, is their bathroom always in good shape.
Well, all of it. They're very into that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, yeah. It's the precision with which that park operates is like a Swiss watch. I mean, they do not fool around. They actually have their own feral cats, you know, a colony of 100 of them to keep the mice away. And there were people in California during the pandemic who were very afraid that the cats would go hungry. But au contraire, the cats are just fine.
Yeah, two things I wanted to talk about. TJ was asking about a shortwave radio with big sound.
Yeah.
He give any indication as to what kind of bit he has for this?
No.
Okay. Did he say anything about the kind of room that he's planning on using it in?
I would just assume your basic bedroom or living room or something like that. I don't think it was a concert hall.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
And then as far as preference between new radios, does he have a preference as far as he insists on being the first owner, or is he okay with the idea of getting a used radio somewhere?
He did not voice. I would assume used would be fine, but if you're talking about something that still has tubes, hopefully it's something where the tubes can be replaced and they still exist.
Well, the thing with tube radios is when you buy one of those, you're not just buying a radio, you're essentially buying a whole new hobby.
Well, and a heater, yes. All true. But, you know, nothing sounds better. Man, I'll tell you, you get you one of those EL34s, no, just pear-shaped tones, the best.
Right, but, you know, in a way, that can be a problem, because if you're not careful, you can listen to hours of rubbish before you realize, you know what? The only reason I just listened to that is because it sounded so good on this radio.
Good enough.
Yeah. You had talked about Grundig last night.
Yeah.
The Grundig of today is not the Grundig of your parents.
Oh, of course not.
I know. Yeah. I mean, Grundig was known for really superbly well-made radios that sounded great, but the reason why they were able to produce such good radios is because they had a factory in Portugal that helped keep the labor costs low, but which was close enough to Germany so that the Germans could keep it on the quality control. That factory closed in the last radio they made, and that was the Satellite 700.
And then
that's an excellent radio. Bob in Tennessee had mentioned the Satellite 500. That was the one that they made just before the 700.
Oh, right. You know, the 650 in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. That's another good one, too. But the reason I mention it is when you're comparing the radios with the Grundy name on it, if you're comparing those to the radios that are made today, that's one thing. But people are buying Grundigs made today with the idea that, you know what, this is going to be like the Grundig my parents had.
No.
They're really barking up on tree because, you know, ever since the turn of the century, all of Grundig stuff has been made in China. So it's comparable to what you'll get from manufacturers. But the reason I mention it is because if people see the Grundig name and they're thinking along the lines of, hey, if I buy this, this will be just like the old radios Grundig used to make. It's completely different.
No, it went into bankruptcy, you know, almost two decades ago, and it's a name now, just like so many other names that have absolutely nothing to do with the underlying products.
Yeah, it's kind of sad what happened to them, but it's not a coincidence that Grundig started having financial problems at around the time that the Chinese were starting to get big into consumer electronics.
Yeah, absolutely. And the result was lesser quality, no two ways about it. But now we're in a disposable environment, and most people are happy to listen on their phones or what have you. So the idea of full fidelity doesn't exist. And, you know, it's also interesting that what's made for today's music in terms of how it's done and all that fits just fine electronically on today's speakers. But, you know, if you're trying to play something from the 50s or whatever, you can hear the defects badly. But most people today aren't listening to that.
Yeah, and that's really the thing with shortwave, is shortwave's been kind of a niche market for a couple of decades now, because I know right around the turn of the century, I started getting into it. And of course, whenever I get something, that's everyone else's cue to start getting out of it.
Rough, so, yeah, I can relate to this. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I learned with my first Grundig purchase there at the turn of the century that, you know what, in its own light, this isn't a bad radio. But when I was comparing it to what I'd known before with the, you know, with the satellites and the classic radios, huge difference.
Oh, absolutely. They had a reel-to-reel tape recorder for a while. I mean, they had so many neat things. And yes, of course, all those 50s, stereos and the furniture that went with it and all that. It was just terrific.
Yeah. One of these days, if you think of it, I know you're talking about what Mitch Miller thought of rock and roll.
Yeah.
Did you ever come across Frank Sinatra's remarks concerning rock and roll?
Oh, yeah. But he just didn't have the same historical impact. Thank God. All right. You've ended the hour, so call me soon. Thank you.
Okay. Right. Thanks again, Raleigh.
Good deal. So most of the pop standard artists were just aghast is what it was. Either that or completely dismissive, both of which were just a few steps away from reality on WGN Radio.